Welcome, friends. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. It's the 6th of August, 2012 here in Japan, and today I'm joined on the line from the United States by Jack Blood of DeadlineLive.info, and I have no doubt that he will need no introduction to most of the listeners out there, but just out of curiosity, Jack, if there is someone, one person out there in the audience who is not aware of your work, what would be the short few-line bio that you'd give them about yourself and your background?
Well, first of all, James, thanks for having me on the show. It's a real honor. I'm a huge fan of your work that has just really been so prolific all these years. I posted a number of your stories and videos up at DeadlineLive.info, and they always do very good. And you're an amazing reporter and investigator. I am a conspiracy debunker. I like to call myself that. So what we do is we debunk these outrageous conspiracy theories, usually woven by the government and the mainstream media, and try to fill in some of the blanks to help people to read between the lines. I often say that I'm a deprogrammer. We deprogram people. We de-illusion, not disillusion people, and help people to unlearn some of the propaganda and memes that they've been taking in all their life with public education, for instance.
Well, I can appreciate that description because I think that's what I tried or aspire to do at any rate with things like 9/11 and the ridiculous conspiracy theories the government likes to propound about that. So I'm very much on board with that philosophy.
Yeah, people seem just too eager to believe the government and mainstream media accounts of stories. And sometimes they're close. Sometimes they're right. And we'll give them credit when they're close or right. They're generally never right, but close sometimes. There's usually some cancer in with the candy. But it's definitely a job. When we started doing it about 10, 11 years ago, there wasn't a lot of it. So we have had a lot of experience. We've spoken to some of the top researchers, best-selling authors, celebrities, whatnot around the world. And I've been really lucky to just sit down and pick the brain of somebody like yourself. We had you on for an hour a week or so ago, and that was fantastic.
Well, I appreciate that, and I appreciate you reaching out to me because, honestly, I've wanted to have you on for a long time, but it's just one of those things that has never come together. So I'm glad that we're finally together, and hopefully we can do this more often. I'd love to go over headlines with you on a more regular basis and talk about what's on up at Deadline Live.
Well, I'm at your disposal. Please don't dispose of me.
I'll try not to. All right. Well, let's get into it. I want to go through a couple of the headlines you have up right now at DeadlineLive.info, including this one. Senators want to, in brackets, do spend our tax dollars to control the weather. And this comes from a Daily Caller article, but you've got some extra info posted in the form of Why in the World Are They Spraying's official trailer. So tell us a little bit about this story and where it's coming from.
Yeah, well, actually, this is an old story, and they're really trying to pump into the mainstream and they're using, of course, global warming and droughts and any number of excuses to, you know, you're supposed to support them to do whatever they can do with the weather to help you. Now, the average person, come on, they're not going to understand how any of this works. And that's, of course, the lie, is that they're trying to get you on their side and the funding in order to start geoengineering. Because the truth is, they've been doing it for quite some time, as I think people will know if they look up in the sky and see the giant X's and the grids. And, of course, we've got scientists, and that's why I put Why in the World Are They Spraying, the sequel to What in the World Are They Spraying? Because what we found is that everything that they say they want to do with geoengineering, a lot of the components that they say are going to be involved, such as aluminum and barium, et cetera, on and on, with geoengineering are being found all over the place, and especially where there is heavy spraying, aerosol spraying or chemtrail spraying. So though it is a touchy subject, I think a story like this, Kay Bailey Hutchison, as you know, and she's teamed up with a Democrat. So they got Republicans and Democrats. Kay's on her way out now. She's just retired, but this is going to be one of her legacies. She's along with Mark Udall. And what they're trying to do is introduce some bills, all of them which have been quote-unquote unsuccessful, to create a national board to oversee and fund research into weather modification. Now, anyone that's done any just tiny amount of research into weather modification has seen that it's been used. In fact, they used it in the Chinese Olympics the last go-around. They bragged about that. They used it in Vietnam, of course, as we know, to get rid of deforestation and to, train the enemy into a certain guideline where they can, you know, shoot them down, et cetera. I mean, this has been used constantly. We have no doubt about that. I think the evidence is clear. The experts have weighed in. So it is interesting that they are trying to still get this funding, so to speak. I think what we're looking at is a lot of black budget funding up until now. But like everything else, it incrementally comes until it's accepted by the public, and then the public begins footing the bill for this. So Hutchinson in 2004, 2005 introduced a bill to establish this comprehensive coordinated national weather modification policy. This is totally Orwellian, national cooperative federal and state programs of weather modification research and development. And all they're really doing is, again, is justifying what they're already doing. Of course, I think you might remember Dennis Kucinich's Space Preservation Act, where he names chemtrails or aerosol spraying as one of the things that are going on that need to be checked and managed. So, I mean, that's really something that we've been asking for is, okay, you're doing this, admit you're doing it, and let's have some kind of citizens board to manage and look into exactly what you're doing, because there could be unintended consequences even under the best of circumstances.
Well, you're right. I mean, even though this article was only posted at the Daily Caller a few days ago, it's going back to 2011 at the latest, and really back to 2004, 2005 when this was starting. So clearly this is not a news story by any means. It's just something that they're really bringing out into the open at this point. And as you say, I think this is part of the indoctrination of steeping the public in this idea that suddenly this is a new idea that they're unveiling to the public, but it clearly isn't. So what's your sense on the American public right now, and how willing or unwilling they would be to go along with this agenda at this moment as they try to start unveiling it to the public?
Sure. Well, I think there'll be a lot of people for it immediately, which is why I think they feel like the moral climate, the intellectual climate is such where they can roll this thing back out. What you may not know, what a lot of people maybe haven't talked about, is that controlling and tampering with the weather, as it's called, has been banned by the United Nations since 1978. So there is some kind of a global treaty that you're not allowed to use it, because, as they know, you can use it to weaponize. You can weaponize the weather and to use it to attack continents or sovereign nations, to attack their food supply, to put them under undue energy stress or financial stress. In fact, that's part of why in the world are they spraying, which is coming out here in just a week or two. People can get that actually ahead of time, and it's fantastic. I got a preview copy of it. And one of the things they go into is how Wall Street and hedge funds are able to, you know, get into futures markets and determine when they know that weather modification is going to be used, or geoengineering, as they call it, is going to be used. If they have advanced knowledge of that, it's a form of insider trading. So we believe that a lot of this has been going on, but then they have to get around the United Nations as well. And this is something, it's kind of like the attack on Iran that hasn't happened yet. There's not a world consensus quite on this whole deal. So they need to have a proper problem in order to offer the solution to finally get in and take out Iran, no matter what the consequences. And we know they're chomping at the bit for that. So global consensus would be, no, we don't want this, because you could use this against us. National consensus, though, I think would probably be pretty easy to obtain at this point.
Right. And of course, one of the key steps in that entire process is just securing the funding at the federal level. So once they've got that in place and above board, instead of operating out of black budgets, it'll be a lot easier for them to get this through, like every other kind of black op they want to pass through. So you did mention why in the world are they spraying Michael Murphy, obviously the filmmaker behind that. Are you going to have him on the program soon to talk about this?
We've had him a couple of times. In fact, we just did a great show with Dane Wigington, who is one of the scientists. In fact, he used to work for Bechtel Corporation and has since resigned and become a whistleblower. And Dane and I did a great interview a couple of weeks ago. And I think Michael will come back again with us either this week or next week, too, because I actually want to hit him up for the very questions you're getting to me today, this new development with Hutchison and Mark Udall trying to, again, pave the way to get this funding. Can you believe we have the money for funding like this in the situation that we're in the United States? But look, what they're going to do, and part of this fear mongering to this hysteria about global warming and climate change could very well, I think, go a long way into helping people accept the fact that there needs to be some kind of tax or some kind of an extra fee to gather the money for this, that they have to do it or we're all going to die.
That's always the way they love to roll out their agenda, yes. So please save us, loving mother government. Well, let's move on to other news that unfortunately is no more uplifting, but I understand that you recently had Abby Martin scheduled to appear on your show, but she was forced to cancel because of a strange turn of events. Let's talk a little bit about what happened to Abby.
Yeah, well, if you haven't heard this story, it is pretty disturbing. You know, a lot of us are still a little shaken in the wake of the endorsement, and not just endorsement, but the help and campaigning and glowing endorsement by Rand Paul for Mitt Romney, the alleged, he's not actually the nominee yet. They still have to have the convention here at the end of the month, but he's the assumed nominee for the Republican Party for president. And, you know, Rand Paul really jumped on board before his father was even fully out of it, we thought. And we were very disturbed about that. And he had been asked by Abby Martin and Luke Radowski about that in particular, why he chose to support this neocon. Going back into further comments, previous comments he had given to Luke Radowski from We Are Change about, you know, what the Bilderberg Group is about, and that he had, I guess, promised to maybe do some kind of audit of Goldman Sachs. He's completely flipped on all of this. So Abby and Luke kind of teamed up. I'm not even sure if this was planned, but Luke had followed him into the Senate chambers where he was having some press conference, and Abby Martin was in there as well. And they both begin to question him on his sudden endorsement for Mitt Romney, his backpedaling on some of the policies. I probably would have been tougher on him, to be quite frank with you. And I've known Rand for quite a while. I've done events with him, and all of this came as quite a shock to me. He had nothing to say, would not acknowledge them. He really played the role that you would expect somebody like Jay Rockefeller to play. Senator Jay Rockefeller, not Rand Paul.
Actually, I think Luke has had better back and forth with Jay than they did with Rand there.
You know, you wouldn't expect this is the candidate of the people, the senator of the people, Ron Paul's son, you know, heir to the revolution. And he needs to talk to us, and he's not now. So what happened later was that Abby had gotten a call from the Senate Relations Committee to RT, and they had questioned they made allegations that she had somehow let Luke Radowski in, snuck him in, and had broke some kind of protocol at Senate chambers, which is pretty ferocious. You do need to be accredited media. You know how this works, on and on and on. This is a way to keep the real reporters and not the repeaters out of the Senate chambers bothering the poor senators. We can't have that. They can't be answering to the people or what we call the fourth estate here, the media. So, so that happened. And then she went on with Luke to really come back and to tell this whole story. And I don't think she was supposed to say anything about this. And pinning this directly to Rand Paul, Rand Paul was crying and complaining that, you know, he was accosted by these so-called unaccredited media sources inside the Senate chambers. So to make a long story short, they called her back in. And this is the amazing part. All the bureau chiefs of all the major networks got her in a little room and started interrogating her, her being Abby Martin, who was just set to get a promotion at Russia Today and to do a bigger show and, you know, to kind of elevate her status, which I think is well-deserved. And she, again, stuck to her guns. I don't know what you're talking about. This is all above board. And she wrote me, again, the morning of the interview, which we had put together a few weeks before any of this even happened, and saying that she was in fear for her job and that she needed to be quiet and she's, you know, working with the people at RT. So just again, to kind of put a capsule into all of this, it's real simple that Rand Paul didn't like being questioned. He turned her into the Senate Foreign or the Senate Relations Committee. They went at RT, the entire media, including Al Jazeera, ganged up on her and RT, and they threatened to take all of their credentials away. And the moral of the story is, if you want to be in the media, you want to be credible in the media, you have to have access to these people. And they're constantly, James, in fear of losing that access. That's why they never ask any hard questions.
What a crazy story. And especially when people go back and compare that most recent confrontation, I guess, unfortunately, with Rand in the Senate chambers, as compared to what he was talking to Luke about on the campaign trail back in 2010. He was happy to talk about Bilderberg and things like that. But suddenly, once he's, I guess, tasted that brass ring of power, it's never wants to give it up. So it is a really disturbing story in a lot of ways. What would you be saying to the people out there who, like yourself, have supported the Pauls and have worked for them in the past and campaigned for them and blown the trumpet in their favor? What would you say to those people out there when they're looking at a story like this?
You know, I don't know if it's absolute power corrupting absolutely, or if they have something on Rand. That's something I've been suspicious of, because he is from a younger generation. He was a little wild in college. I don't know what they might have on him. And apparently he made the deal to, and this is what he's confessed to, he made the deal to support the nominee. And I'm sure he knew that was going to be Romney, because I did, even back before he was elected. So that was part of the deal to get the endorsements that he got. Remember Sarah Palin, cousin Sarah Palin, as we call her, part of the Brewster line. She endorsed him. So he kind of went establishment before the election. We should have all seen this coming. My advice to you is I do still support Ron Paul. I support the good things that he does and that the Pauls would do. I will call out the bad things, as I've always done. These are politicians. They're not your friends. I know that they seem like great people in comparison to all the slugs and slime that we have in the houses of Congress. They're probably heads and tails above them, but you got to be really careful. So, you know, you just can't believe somebody when they tell you something. You have to look into it and think it through for yourself, using your own intuition and your own knowledge and research. So when I look into, just for one quick example, I look into Rand Paul saying he wants to ban drone surveillance, but he says it's okay if the police have a warrant or if it's, you know, a threat to national security, in the interest of national security. Well, this is all we ever hear about something like the Patriot Act. There's always an excuse to do this extreme surveillance on Americans. So, you know, he's just and I can go down a litany of other things that seem good when he says them, but are really bad. He is somebody to be very careful with, as is any politician. I don't support parties. I don't even support politicians. I support policy and action, and that action would generally have to do with decentralization and repealing of any law. Repeal, because all laws are selectively enforced, in nature, depending on who you are, how much money and what your connections are, laws and regulations, all selectively enforced, and there is no such thing as security. It's totally fake. So we have to decentralize and repeal, and if a politician does that, I don't care if it's John McCain or somebody who, by the way, who also is getting praised heavily by Rand Paul recently. I don't care who it is. If they're doing something that is in line with that philosophy, for me, decentralize and repeal, they got my support on that thing. But that's it.
Well, certainly think for yourself and verify everything people are saying are words to live by regardless. But let's get your take on what is your political philosophy, really? Because in my own work and my own research over the past several years, I've developed from something more like, a mainline libertarian, although I've never really been a card-carrying member of any party and probably never will. But I've gone from that towards more of a voluntarist position that I really don't see. I know a lot of people argue for limited government. I don't even understand what the point of that is, really. When you get down to it, all government is the same, and all of it is naturally and inherently immoral and corrupt and works on taxation through violence. So what's your take on that, and where do you stand on the political spectrum?
I agree. In a perfect world, I agree with what you just said about voluntarism. That makes a lot of sense. I am an anarchist at heart, but I'm an anarcho-capitalist, and I am a minarchist. And the reason I am is because we don't live in utopia. We live in a world where there are crazy, sick, dangerous, evil people. And I know I sound like Sean Hannity or something when I say that, Sean Vanity, as I call him. But I come from the streets. I'm not, I didn't grow up on the rich side of town, and I've always kind of had this sheltered life. I've lived in some really bad places. I know how evil and bad people can be, and there has to be some kind of mechanism to address this. So mainly there is a few reasons for government. And of course, our government is supposed to be not taking our liberties, but they're supposed to be there to protect our liberties. So you can find, even if you just look at the Constitution, which has loopholes and a lot of problems, unfortunately, but even if you just look at that and you just follow that, I mean, we're going to be so much better off. So I think there can be a role for government, and I guess that makes me a statist just a little bit. But that's only because we have not achieved this global consciousness yet, which I think we can, which will get us past a point where, you know, we have to make our points with violence, and where the government has to use violence against its citizens or vice versa. And I'm a realist, James, and that's why. And maybe I still have some indoctrination yet to shed, but I can't see how it almost appears like in a complete anarchy situation that it would be a law of the jungle, and that poor people, not just poor people, but weak people, people who can't stand up for themselves, will have no other means but to be run over. And I am very concerned about that.
Well, I do understand where you're coming from. I just think that the minarchist position is the utopian position, because it's never happened, and I don't think it ever will. But I nonetheless, I understand. I certainly was coming from that perspective for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, but look, what we're trying to do is, and this is why states' rights, for instance, is important, because, and why individual rights are important, because we're still in the experimental phase. We're still very young. as a civilized society. And, you know, I could paint a perfect picture of exact the government that I want. And if everybody did what I said and how it would work, you know, it would be wonderful. But if somebody else disagrees with that, then I'm oppressing them. And there's always going to be that oppression, no matter what form of government you have. But you could be right. Minarchy could be a utopian fantasy, just as, you know, the progressives think that if you take all the money from the rich and give it to the poor, everything will be fine. You know, so... we all have a lot of fantasy ideas, but we are in the middle of an experiment. So when we find something that does work, we need to get behind it a little bit more and work with it a little bit more, rather than just being in this kind of speed philosophy course where if something doesn't work in the first 2 days, we just bag it and move on.
Well, I think public participation is going to be key no matter what system we choose. And that's absolutely, I think, part of my message is that people have to get out there and support those causes that they're into. So some accord there, certainly. Well, let's talk about any other stories that you're working on right now. I know there's the Sikh temple shooting, which is just breaking, and I understand that you're working on that. Anything else that you're working on for Deadline Live?
Well, this is a crazy story that even the mainstream media seems to be latching on. It's been made political, but the fact that there is the rebels in Syria do seem to be Al-Qaeda, have ties to terrorism, and are being backed by Western intelligence and even the State Department in D.C. here in the United States of America with Hillary Clinton, who praised these rebels, which is a.k.a. Al-Qaeda's bombing and taking out of several senior government officials here just 2 weeks ago. So the Republicans, the conservative or right-wing media, call it what you want, are openly talking about how we're funding Al-Qaeda against Assad in Syria, which I think is a big development. I really wish people would acknowledge that more, because then maybe if they remember that it happened now during a Democrat administration, when it happens again, and it will, in a Republican administration, they'll maybe finally get that both of these people are corrupt and or stupid and incompetent, because this has always brought blowback, if you want to call it blowback, or these people who have been funded and trained into existence, you know, by intelligence have always been used for other purposes. And I think this is a pretty major story that is should get a lot more play. Yeah, it's Al-Qaeda. It's MEK. I mean, we're using, just like we did with the Mujahideen, just as we did, you know, time and time again, we have funded and trained terrorists for our own advantages, just as they did with, let's say, Hamas against the PLO. And then they go back later and they cry about how something must be done about Hamas and how they're working with Iran and how we gave Iran bombs, you know, and weapons as the same time the Reagan administration was giving them to Iraq. I mean, we have pictures of Brzezinski and we have pictures of Donald Rumsfeld on the ground. Here's the weapons, you know, and then two, three, 4 years later, they're the enemy. I need people to understand this, the futility of all of this. And I'm glad this is a big story.
I am too, but it is puzzling that that's all coming out now, as well as they're finally starting to talk about some of the atrocities being committed by the so-called Free Syrian Army in Aleppo, and showing some of that footage, because I think RT broke it, and so they were forced to cover it, perhaps to a certain extent. But it is really bizarre that they're starting to report some of this. Is this some sort of turning of the tide, or is this just more of the look what we can do, and we can put it out in the open, and you're not going to say anything about it type of power trip that the media tends to go on sometimes?
So basically your guess is it's not the truth. What is it?
You know? Yeah,
I think that's what I hear you saying. And maybe you're right. I think maybe it's the second one. Yeah, we can use this to demonize the other administration because people fall down the memory hole. They don't remember what George Bush did or what George Bush Sr. did or what Ronald Reagan did on their part. So you know, maybe they just trust and they have faith in the loss of memory, lack of memory, and the use of fluoride on Americans so that they think they can do it. But I really think that they're so desperate to take back the majority power, which, you know, leads to money and rewards and perks for all of these guys. I really think that they'll say anything, and they just don't care at this point. And they know that they can always go back and discredit themselves. Which is what we've seen them do it.
Because the public's not going to say anything about it. Are you optimistic or pessimistic, ultimately?
I am pessimistically optimistic. Is that makes sense? So in the big picture, I am optimistic. You know, look, the great thing is that we have these weapons now, the weapons like the James Corbett show or the Jack Blood show. We have weapons of information. I mean that in the most nonviolent way. And the people are, I think, understanding a lot more about the boy who cried wolf and, you know, some of the things that we're dealing with. It's so much to understand, though, in a short amount of time. All I want to do is hold freedom for my kid and, you know, train our children in a way to pick up this ball and keep carrying it, because it could just be a generational fight. You may never eliminate tyranny. It may be that every generation has to pick up the fight and keep fighting, so to speak. And I don't mean that in a violent term, but you know, standing up for yourself. So I've thought this for years, James, that it is possible that all we're doing is holding the fort here for another generation, and we're getting a few incremental battles won. In the end, I think there is going to have to be a major shift in consciousness, personally, before we win the war. And I do believe that's possible.
Well, I couldn't agree more. I think this is ultimately about consciousness, and all of these details are just little details that they use to sort of paint the picture. But the overall picture, I think you're exactly right. I think we have to remain optimistic that what we're doing is doing something and can accomplish something, even if it is just that holding of the fort for another generation. And certainly if our forefathers and foremothers were willing to put their lives on the line and literally spill their blood all over in order to water that tree of liberty, we should at the very least be willing to stand up for what's true and right. So it's good to see people like yourself doing that at deadlinelive.info. I certainly hope people will check it out if they haven't before, but I'm sure pretty much everyone has. And I understand you have a relatively new broadcast on No Agenda Radio. Tell us about that.
Sure. I do a Monday through Friday. That would be 10 o'clock to 12 o'clock a.m. to noon, 12 noon in the Eastern time zone. Monday through Friday, No Agenda Global Radio. The godfather of all podcasts, Adam Curry. That is his network, and he does the No Agenda show twice a week, which is fantastic. And it's a building process. There's a number of volunteers that work with it, and we work like you. We do our motive is value for value. If we give you value with the information we give you, then, contribute and give the value back to us so we can keep going. And that's how we work, and that's how you work too. And so we are really owned and run and produced and executive produced by the people. No Agenda Radio, that's noagendastream.com. And please check us out over there.
Absolutely right. And of course, the donate buttons are there on deadlinelive.info. I hope people will chip in a few bucks if they appreciate your work. Jack Blood, absolutely great to have you on the program. I hope it's one conversation of many more to come. So thanks for your time today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, James. I can't wait to see how this turns out, because I know how you make everybody look good. So I was really psyched.
I do my best. All right, take care.
All right, be bold.